This is the Breaker.News podcast for August 19th, 2018. Welcome, I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, regular features like the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines about the Pacific Rim, Cascadia Calling, headlines about the Pacific Northwest, The Big Deal feature. The Pacific National Exhibition Fair is on now until Labor Day, and the Breaker.News goes on a tour of the Popnology exhibit, where science fiction meets science fact. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those who deserve it. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or was the impressive show of solidarity by 350 newspapers in the United States on August 16th something that should have happened long ago? The Boston Globe-led editorial campaign used the hashtag Free Press against President Donald Trump and his declaration that the media is the enemy of the people. Donald Trump is today's most bombastic anti-press politician, but he is not the first. His predecessors, including even Barack Obama, used more subtle tactics to prevent reporters from doing their job. In Canada, the federal government, provinces, and some cities spend way too much money on corporate communications to further the permanent campaign goals of the political masters. They also spend too much money keeping secrets and hindering the public and the press's right to know. Earlier this week, the Vancouver punk scene lost Randy Rampage, also known as Randy Archibald. The 58-year-old former member of DOA and Annihilator came home from his job as a longshoreman and suffered a heart attack. He wrote a memoir about his years in DOA, the pioneering hardcore punk band with a sharp political message, and he told a reviewer from Beatroot magazine this. He said, "People are sick and tired of political administrations that whip them like rented mules." That is another reminder that an independent media that serves the governed, not the governors, is vital to a democracy. What do you think? Email me, bob@thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Alvin Lum reports, "Separatist leader Andy Chan cannot be charged under current Hong Kong law, city lawyers say." Andy Chan Ho Tin's August 14th speech at the Foreign Correspondents Club in Hong Kong caused a Beijing official to accuse him of sedition. Zhang Xiaoming of the Hong Kong and Macau office took issue with Chan's speech that denounced China and insisted on independence for Hong Kong. Zhang said Chan, leader of the Hong Kong National Party, could be charged under Article 9 of the Crimes Ordinance and the FCC could be dragged in for helping him. Asked whether Zhang's remark could pressure the government to prosecute Chan or to table a national security law, Executive Counselor Ronnie Tong said, "I can't see him making any directive. He has his own freedom of speech, but what he said should not be taken too seriously." He warned that prosecuting anyone for seditious speech could worsen social unrest. Even if the city did enact Article 23, he said, a person should only be found guilty of sedition if they incite violence. In the Star Online, Royce Tan reports, a slew of scandals. There has been no rest for the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission, which has been investigating the scandals involving billions of ringgit. While the main focus for the graftbusters and Malaysians is the scandal-ridden 1MDB and the $800 million that found its way into former Prime Minister Najib Razak's personal account, other wrongdoings cropped up from reports lodged by politicians, members of the public, and even whistleblowing reports from civil servants themselves. There have been scandals abound, like the publication of a book about Najib Razak, the sale of 64 parcels of land by Kuala Lumpur City Hall, a gas pipeline deal, and a Tourism Malaysia social media promotional deal with a Chinese company, plus construction procurement. On ABC News in Australia, Henry Beloit reports, big consultancy firms call the federal government the dairy because they milk it for all it's worth, inquiry hears. Are consultants making so much money from the federal government that they're now treating departments as cash cows and openly dubbing it the dairy? That's the charge from Federal Labor, which confronted the big four consultancy firms, Deloitte, KPMG, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and Ernst & Young, at a parliamentary inquiry. The firms, which have won more than 1.7 billion Australian dollars in federal government business in recent years, say they are not aware of the nickname reportedly used by some Canberra-based staff who work with the government. The companies insist they are providing vital services and expertise, but former Border Force Commissioner Roman Quadvaleg has described them as a pack of predatory sharks hitting a bait ball in a feeding frenzy. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Seattle Times, Evan Bush reports, BC logging threatens probably one of the most intact ecosystems in the Northwest. Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan, in a rare step earlier this month, wrote British Columbia Premier John Horgan with grave concern, admonishing his government for not consulting with the city on a BC logging project some 125 miles away from Seattle at the headwaters of the Skagit River. Much of the Skagit's headwaters are protected by Canadian parks, but to preserve historic mining rights, the BC government set aside a forested area the size of Manhattan that's surrounded by parkland. It's known now as the Donut Hole. Crews this summer began to fell trees inside the Donut Hole at the behest of British Columbia's government. Conservationists who once fought to keep Seattle from flooding the area now worry that BC will allow the valley to be hollowed at its center. CoinTV reports, kingpin of bike thefts gets prison again. The so-called kingpin of bike thefts, Leroy Parsons Jr., has been booked into the Multnomah County Jail about 80 times since 1997. He was recently sentenced to prison for violating his 2015 probation. Over the course of two decades, the 50-year-old Parsons has been the subject of more than 200 police reports, the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office said. He was booked on July 28th for being in possession of stolen property. But in a court appearance on August 8th, the DA's office opted to change the charge to a probation violation. Judge Eric Dahleen sentenced him to 25 months in prison. And Czech TV reports, memorial for ex-Mountie who helped bring light to harassment at the RCMP. For 7 years, former Mountie Krista Karl helped bring light to abuse and harassment within the RCMP. In July, she committed suicide after struggling for years with post-traumatic stress disorder. At her memorial service, friends and family remembered the woman who made such an impact. She started with the RCMP in 1991. And others in her graduating troop also suffered sexual harassment and bullying. But Carl's struggles with PTSD from her time in the RCMP took a turn for the worse earlier this summer. And her family wants to highlight her struggles, and they are not hiding from her death. Quote, I would also like to highlight Krista did commit suicide. I don't want to say she died, said her sister. I want people to know that suicide is epidemic these days, end quote. Carl leaves behind three siblings, a partner, and two children. Many of her former colleagues stood with Carl's family as they released 27 balloons as a remembrance of her life. Krista, we love you, they said. That's Cascadia Calling for this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The Pacific National Exhibition Fair is on for the 108th year at Hastings Park in East Vancouver. It opened August 18th, and it runs through Labor Day. The fair has always been about the past, the present, and the future of British Columbia. Well, inside the Rollerland building near the 50-year-old Pacific Coliseum is the free-with-admission exhibition called Popnology. It's about how science fiction became science fact. It features robotics, drones, driverless cars, the evolution of the smartphone. You can experience virtual reality, and you can witness live 3D printing. Popnology is about how we play, how we connect, how we move, and how we live and work. The Breaker went on a tour of the Popnology exhibit with Troy Carlson, the CEO of Stage 9 Exhibitions, the company behind Popnology.
What is Popnology? It's about pop culture's impact on today's technology. Pop culture. Technology. Popnology. Get it? I knew you would. You guys, our popnologists, are about to see how TV, books, and movies planted the seeds for amazing technology.
And this is Popnology. Popnology is two words, pop culture and technology. So this exhibit took 3 years to put together, and we worked with some of the leading technology companies in the world to look at where we've been and where we're going. Since technology is moving so quickly, there's so many questions on 3D printing and robotics and driverless cars, but it's also important to look at where we've come from. It's amazing when you think, like over here, you guys can see a giant replica of the what they call the brick phone, Motorola. It was just in 1983 that the first phone came out. And now our smartphone that you have in your pocket has more computing power than the Apollo mission. We're just talking in a mere 20-something years. So the exhibit's broken up into four areas: how we live and work, how we connect, how we play, and how we move. And looking at technologies, also looking at the visionaries, the futurists, and looking at how we've been inspired through movies, literature, art, and books. There's a lot of pop culture references that have inspired, and there's many panels that talk about scientists that were inspired when they saw 2001: A Space Odyssey, and this idea of artificial intelligence. Now, you know, the joke is that, you know, Hal, if Hal had to let Siri know, without me, you may not be around. And things that we now think of as science fiction, maybe colonies on Mars someday will become science fact, just like many of the things that you will see in Popnology. This is Baxter. He's a new type of workplace robot, much more friendly than what you see in factories, but he's redeployable. So he can be trained many tasks, so he can work next to you, and then if that task is done, he can be moved to another part of the warehouse where he has to do packaging or other type of tasks. He has all different, he can use pneumatics to pick up things, he can use grippers. So the idea is to make robotics more affordable, and also to give him a personality so that he's not just this mindless, because robotics is going to be a part of our interaction, and who's going to work side by side and maybe doing tasks that are too dangerous or are, I guess for the lack of a better word, mind-numbing. So in the library, this is many of the visionaries and futurists from the past, the present, and that are forecasting the future. And then as we walk through, there's also our cabinets here in the library that showcase a lot of what we felt were the inspirations for Popnology, from magazines and movies and obviously literature, Jules Verne, H.G. Wells, Isaac Asimov, Steve Jobs, Neil deGrasse Tyson, that are really inspiring, have this inspired and are continuing to inspire content. This is the world's first 3D printed car. It's a new concept, the 3D printer, obviously not a tabletop but the size of a living room. The idea is micro factories, so instead of having a car that has 20,000 parts, this one only has, I think it's 20 parts, the panels over there, but can be produced in small factories, and every city or town could have a micro factory that could produce things. We were talking about the cell phone. This is looking at April 9th, 1983. Why? Because that's the day that the Motorola brick came onto the market. But when you look in here, it's a great retrospective. Everything's period correct, but everything in this room is now obsolete because your smartphone now does it. So it's a great multi-generational display to look at with your dad, your grandparents, because a lot of kids, they look at that and go, what is that? That's a typewriter. That's a Rolodex. That's an encyclopedia, was where we would get knowledge. We'd go to the library, but how fast? So many of these things aren't needed anymore.
Today is April 9th, 1983. Meet Bob, who could really use a smartphone. Too bad they won't be available for another 25 years or so.
Here, we're looking at live 3D printing through the entire fair. Many people have heard of 3D printing, they haven't really seen it in action. On the back side of the cabinet, there's all different applications for 3D printing. That's one of the big questions. Well, what do you do with this? Well, there's art, there's manufacturing, now they're 3D printing in metals. Over here, one of our partners, Made in Space, they were responsible for sending the first zero-G 3D printer to the space station. So now, instead of having to launch a part into space, they can just send the plans, and if they need a wrench, they can 3D print it. And on the backside is also a company out of Japan that is 3D printing prosthetics, so it brings the price really down. That's the idea with 3D printing, that a lot of these concepts are in the hands of everyone. You know, before you'd have to create a mold and send it to a company to have it created, so things become much more attainable. Think of a movie that talked to the future. This was probably the grandfather of them all. Obviously, we can't travel through time, but many of the ideas in Back to the Future and Back to the Future 2 have actually come to fruition. One of our partners in it, Edward Eyth, and there's a panel over here, he was tasked with creating what would 2015 be like. So he created all these ideas, and many of them came to reality. The joke was in 2015, you know, where's our hoverboard? So we really don't have a hoverboard yet. Sometimes futurists are tasked to look into the future and say, well, what is 2050 going to look like on many levels? You know, what are buildings to be made of? How do we, you know, solve some issues in society and building and smart cities and transportation?
That was Troy Carlson at the Popnology exhibit at the Pacific National Exhibition, free with fair admission until September 3rd, Labor Day. You can find more information about schedules and admission discounts and promotions at the Pacific National Exhibition. Go to pne.ca. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the people who bring us the Pacific National Exhibition Fair. The 108th edition is on now until Labor Day at Hastings Park in East Vancouver. Shelley Frost took over recently as president from Mike McDaniel, who left for Coast Mountain Bus Company. Under Frost's management, Hastings Park is alive again with music, animals, food, rides, and fun. It's a party for 700,000-plus guests at the high point of summer, in a city and a province where so much is changing so fast. Nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for August 19th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on August 19th in 1848, the New York Herald newspaper broke a story about a gold rush in California, even though it actually started in January that year? Well, word traveled slowly back in those days. Well, there was a gold rush 2 years later in Haida Gwaii in British Columbia. Well, now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. Thanks to some of our great supporters like Quan Lee, Randy Sogstad, James Plett, Spruce Hill Contracting, Daryl Greer, Elvio Chiez, John Kennedy, and Dave and Burnaby. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week.